You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, March 1st, 2018.
There'll be some long-term impacts that are both, you know, good for the residents, but also good for the community.
Coming up later in the program, WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaks with Shalom Community Center Director Forrest Gilmore about this afternoon's opening of the Crawford 2 housing project. That's coming up in today's feature report.
After Governor Holcomb signed Sunday retail alcohol sales into law yesterday, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asked residents how they feel about buying booze on Sundays. That's coming up later in the program as well on Voices in the Street. But first, your daily headlines.
Bloomington Police Chief Mike Dekoff continues to defend his controversial purchase of a Lenco Bearcat armed vehicle. Dekoff spoke at length at the Tuesday afternoon meeting of the Bloomington Board of Public Safety. Dekoff says this incident in September of 2000 brought home the need for an armored vehicle.
During this incident, which actually started at the Woodbridge 3 apartment complex on East 10th Street, officers were pinned down by a gunman who had entered a home and shot his estranged girlfriend. The gunman, who had previously set several fires and attempted to blow up his own apartment at Woodbridge, withdrew from the house on Bluebird after shooting the female and hid in a wooded area, waiting for officers to arrive. As officers approached the home, they were repeatedly under fire and were unable to get near the home to effect a potential rescue of the female or deal with the gunman. Since BPD had no effective way to deal with the situation, an armored vehicle belonging to the Indianapolis Police Department was ultimately dispatched to assist, arriving some 90 minutes later, which was more than 3 hours after the incident began. This vehicle allowed CERT officers to quickly close in on the gunman, who unfortunately chose suicide rather than being taken into custody. Tragically, the female who had been shot died of her wounds by the time that officers were able to reach her.
The BPD once owned an armored vehicle, which was replaced with a Brinks truck. That truck gave out in 2012. Members of the community have criticized Dekoff for militarizing the police force with the Bearcat purchase. Dekoff sought to assure the community the vehicle would not be dispatched casually. He acknowledged armored vehicles have been used, quote, in ways that even other police professionals have questioned, end quote.
This use has contributed to the fear and concerns expressed by some in those communities and in our own.
Dekoff says currently there is no written policy on how or when the Lenco Bearcat will be used. He says new language will be added to existing policies once the vehicle arrives.
We have never used an armored vehicle in a protest situation and never will. Our general orders are based on national standards from the Commission on Law Enforcement Accreditation, the International Association of Chiefs of Police. Our orders also include all the recommendations from the report on militarization of the police from the ACLU.
Dekoff said deciding on how and when to deploy the CERT team and the Bearcat will be a layered process.
So a street supervisor would actually then make a decision on as to whether or not that they are requesting to use the critical incident response team. The critical incident response team commander would be contacted. A shift lieutenant would be involved in the decision, and it would go up the chain of command. So it would go to a shift lieutenant. If they said okay, then it would go to the captain of operations, who would also have to approve it. After the captain approved it, it would have to go to the deputy chief, who would also have to approve it, and then it would ultimately come to me for approval.
Dekoff also says the vehicle will not be loaned to other communities by itself. He says the CERT team and the vehicle together could be sent if another community requests the assistance.
Safety board members questioned Dekoff on a number of issues, including whether the need for the truck is real. Here's safety board chairperson Susan Yoon.
Chief, the Brinks truck was retired in 2012, and I think there are people that would argue we haven't had anything for 5+ years, and it's been okay. So what's your response
sure.
to that?
Sure. Well, I view this as an insurance policy. Every time we activate our critical incident response team, they are going into situations where they don't have the proper protection that they need. With the prolification of guns, with the prolification of high-powered guns that we have encountered over the last couple of years, this was an urgent enough situation that I'm not willing to risk their safety anymore.
Board member Luis Francis Rohr asked Dekoff to explain the difference between tanks and a heavily armored truck.
A tank is armed. This is not armed. It is armored. So it's a protective vehicle. There are no weapons that are mounted or attached to that vehicle. It is simply to safely transport and rescue people that we might be responding to help.
Fuentes Rohrer also asked Dekoff what BPD does to reduce implicit bias within the force.
What kind of work does the police department do? Because the connection is critical. The idea that, you know, these trucks, these vehicles, these pieces of equipment, right, that we've seen the news, we've seen movies, we've seen it. And so once implicit bias creeps in, well, the fear is real as to what might happen when these things come into our communities. What kind of training do we do with our police officers to make that better, if that's the right word?
So every year we do, so in Indiana, police officers are required to have 24 hours of continuing education training. Our officers average over 100 hours of training every year. Implicit bias is part of that training. We had an implicit bias training session last fall that all of our people went through. Again, that is something that we continue to do yearly. We update all of our training. Implicit bias is part of that.
Dekoff noted several Indiana cities own armored vehicles. He also stated that every Big Ten university has access to an armored vehicle. Board member Kim Gray asked Dekoff about Indiana University's interest in a vehicle. Members of the public were given 3 minutes to speak on the issue. Bloomington firefighter Lee Chapman was among those speaking in support of the Bearcat purchase.
It's no different from a fire truck. And what I want you guys to really give serious thought to is how much is a police officer's life? Because this vehicle will save lives on both ends.
Other concerned community members asked the safety board to use their authority to halt the armored vehicle purchase. They are asking the board to review policing data and consider alternatives. Black Lives Matter organizers Vox Booker and Jada B are among them. They maintain minorities are disproportionately affected when police use force.
So I ask that you guys put a halt to this. It appears that that is within your power. And if it is not in your power, I strongly suggest that you put the pressure on the mayor and the BPD to halt this purchase and come up with other solutions. Both the mayor and the police chief would like to turn that back on us and have us sit here and provide 20,000 different options for you. The onus is not on us. We didn't make this mistake.
IU Labor Studies Professor Joseph Varga has studied policing in communities. He asked members of the safety board to consider reports and studies on the issue.
And there's particularly the reports about how police officers at the point of contact act differently depending upon the equipment that they're using, the vehicles that they're in, and they obviously act more aggressively when they're in more aggressive vehicles and in more aggressive equipment. A study would be 30 incidents that are similar, 15 that used the vehicle like this, 15 that didn't. They do exist, and there are groups out there that do that kind of research. I'm going to say this, and I've said it in quite a few forums now. I appreciate Mike Dekoff's justification for the vehicle, but those are stories. They're anecdotes. I could tell my employer anecdotes about why I need really powerful GIS equipment to do some project, but they're going to want to see data as to why they're going to purchase me that equipment. And we want to see data on this kind of vehicle.
The city hosted another public dialogue on the issue this afternoon at the City Hall atrium. The next meeting of the Board of Public Safety is scheduled for Tuesday, March 20th at 5 p.m. at City Hall.
Police are increasing traffic patrols around Monroe County in preparation for March Madness and St. Patrick's Day. According to a press release from the Bloomington Police Department, local law enforcement agencies are expected to increase patrols for dangerous and impaired driving. The effort includes the Bloomington Police Department, the Ellettsville Police Department, the Monroe County Sheriff's Office, and Indiana State Police. The Bloomington Police Department says last year's St. Patrick's Day weekend had the highest number of crashes involving impaired drivers. In response, they will be conducting random patrols in greater numbers and are expected to set up sobriety checkpoints. The Indiana Criminal Justice Institute and National Highway Transportation Safety Administration purchased over 1,700 new breathalyzer tests for Indiana law enforcement agencies last year. They'll be purchasing over 800 additional tests this year.
The City of Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department is expecting to purchase nearly 3 acres of property next to the Cascade Golf Course on North Walnut past the bypass. According to the Parks and Recreation Department, it spent $400,000 to buy a former Buddhist monastery and the surrounding land, which is adjacent to Lower Cascades Park. The Dagum Gaden Tensung Ling Monastery was founded in 1996 by two well-known Tibetan Buddhist teachers. Parks and Rec Administrator Paul Devitt said the monastery moved to a new address and the owners were willing to sell the former property. Dave Williams is the operations director for the City of Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department. He says the Parks Department has made an offer on 2.89-acre property.
We have not closed on it, so as far as an official completed transaction, that will happen in about a week. But we made an offer to that organization that was accepted, and the actual purchase of the property was proposed to the park board at the February meeting and in the January meeting, and was approved by the Board of Park Commissioners. So we're just awaiting the final real estate closing on the property before we become the owner.
The Parks and Recreation Department's plan for the recently purchased space is to remove existing buildings and to transform the grounds into a green space for its Cascade Parks. Williams says the department is still considering a use for the monastery building itself. Williams says the purchase of the former monastery is in line for the Parks and Recreation Department. He says the department has been buying land around Lower Cascades Park, Bloomington's first city park. In 2006, the city bought half an acre from the Cascades Motorcycle Salvage, and in 2008, they purchased 6 more acres. Williams says the purchase is part of a larger project to connect parcels to the upper and lower Cascades Parks.
The master plan for Cascades Park calls for willing sellers to acquire the property north of the quarry all the way through to the Park Roads connection with North Walnut Street. So over the years, we have acquired the motorcycle shop that was in the center of the park for decades, acquired the mobile home park after that property was vacated, and the next door stone fabrication mill. So this is just another one of our acquisitions that was desirable and, again, made available to us by willing sellers. It was funded by our park bond that not only provides money for land acquisition, but a lot of other park and facility improvement projects.
Williams says the $400,000 cost for less than 3 acres of land is due to state law, which says the city needs to pay the average of 2 appraised lots without having an opportunity to bargain with the owners.
In municipal government, for state government for that matter, you pay average of 2 appraised values. That is by law. We don't have the opportunity to bargain for a lower price. That is what state law stipulates. So we go through the appraisal process. We make sure it's property that's clean, without contamination. We do our due diligence evaluation as to whether it's a desirable acquisition. And then the price is determined by the appraisal costs.
With the monastery property purchase, the city will own the land contiguously from Lower Cascades ball fields through the Sycamore and Waterfall shelters along Cascades Creek south to the Rogers Group Quarry. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograph and Ben Nioff. Slotograph Neoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or at slotographlegal.com. Slotograph Neoff, law for business, community, and life.
The Reverend Forrest Gilmore cut the ribbon on Crawford II Housing Development this afternoon. The Homelessness Housing Project is a joint effort by the Shalom Community Center and Life Designs, among other groups. The Reverend Gilmore spoke with WFHB News Director Wes Martin about the opening of Crawford II and what it means for the communities in South Central Indiana.
If you have a couple minutes to talk about Crawford II the opening that I believe was today, is that the case?
Well, it's been open, but we did the ceremony today.
And can you tell me a little bit about what exactly Crawford II is in terms of housing initiatives in Bloomington?
Sure. It's a housing first program whose intent is to help eliminate chronic homelessness in our community. It works specifically with people who've been homeless for a long time, at least a year, and have disabilities. It's a big part of our homeless population, represents about 15 to 20% of our homeless population, but a lot of people who are chronically homeless have a lot of challenges, a lot of struggles, a lot of needs, and have a huge impact on our community. And so this is a program to attempt to reduce that kind of homelessness.
And it's a little bit different from the other Crawford Housing Project, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So this program is it's a little bit larger than Crawford One. It's the apartment complex that we're dedicating today has 36 apartments, and the Crawford Homes Two program in of itself has 43. There's another 7 apartments that are out and about in the community with other landlords. So it's a bit larger than the first one.
And what kind of impact do you expect this Crawford II high-rise to end up having for Bloomington and the homeless community, which is largely from Bloomington and Monroe County?
At a minimum, we expect to be able to, well, we already have housed 40 to 50, I'm not sure the exact number right now, but somewhere in that range of people who were chronically homeless. And so that's a huge impact right off the bat. But we also know that there'll be some long-term impacts that are both, you know, good for the residents, but also good for the community. In Crawford One, we saw a dramatic drop in emergency room use, 65% drop in emergency room use, and a dramatic drop in incarcerations and arrests, 88% drop in arrests in our residents in the first program in their first year as compared to the year prior. So we expect to see results like that. So very significant positive impact.
And Reverend Gilmore, I'm just wondering, this isn't just the Shalom Community Center that's been behind this. Can you talk a little bit about how this project was brought into fruition?
Yeah, absolutely. The two big partnerships are, of course, Shalom with Life Designs. Life Designs is the owner developer of the property, and hires a property management company called Valenti, and the three agencies, Valenti, Life Designs, and Shalom, work together to do a lot of the work to make it all happen together. So those are the big, probably three partners, I would say, and then we partner with other organizations in the community as well to help provide services, volunteers in medicine, Centerstone, Indiana Recovery Alliance, and on and on, in order to support the residents and help them do better.
And Reverend Gilmore, certainly having formerly homeless individuals who have disabilities of one sort or another, or possibly addictions as well, having these people live together, that of course raises the question of, is there any oversight for Crawford II, and what does that look like for the residents or for the organizations that are involved?
Sure, there's certainly some oversight. One of the aspects of this is we call it housing first, but that doesn't mean it's housing only. So there's quite a bit of supportive services that are involved in helping people stabilize and succeed, helping them accomplish their goals, helping them, you know, improve their lives and such. So that's a big part of what makes it work. And we also have a property management company. We have some overnight staff to help kind of monitor things. So there's a lot of, that goes into making it work. But it is a standard lease, you know, that's a lease similar to what other people would sign as a lease in the communities. So people are held to similar account, you know, in terms of at least they have to be good neighbors. They have to protect the property. They have to not damage their apartment. And we try to work hard to make sure that people, if they struggle with those things, that they learn how to be more successful at being a good tenant.
If you don't mind my asking, how much was the entire cost of developing Crawford 2?
You know, that's a good question. I actually don't have the numbers for what the cost of the building was. Life Designs was the owner and the developer, so they were on that side. We know that from our side, where we provide the supportive services and the rent and utilities for those 43 units, it averages to about $10,000 per apartment per year. One of the things that's kind of amazing about this program, too, is that we know that that chronically homeless individuals on the streets, actually the care and is actually quite a bit more expensive when they're on the streets. You know, the care, the cost to social service agencies, the cost to criminal justice system, the cost to health care. So this can save us, on average, you know, somewhere in the range of $20,000 to $30,000 per person by helping someone move into a home.
Reverend Gilmore, is there anything else that you would like to share with listeners, or anything else you think that people need to know with regards to either homelessness in Monroe County, in Bloomington, or about Crawford 2?
Well, we're just grateful to be a part of this kind of work to really help people with disabilities and experiencing long-term homelessness, to help them end that long challenge and struggle. And people like to learn more, we encourage them to come and check out our website at shalomcommunitycenter.org.
And Reverend Gilmore, Crawford 2 is up and running today. And when will you see the first tenants move in?
Actually, they already have. We've started move-ins in December. So today was the kind of the ribbon cutting and the celebration of the opening. But we've been open for a little over 2 months now.
Reverend Forrest Gilmore, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that was the Reverend Forrest Gilmore speaking with WFHB News Director Wes Martin about this afternoon's official opening of the Crawford 2 housing project.
Support for WFHB also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hydro systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
The Indiana Legislature approved Senate Bill 1 on Tuesday, allowing the retail sale of alcohol on Sundays. Indiana has not allowed retail sales of alcohol on Sundays since 1920, during Prohibition. Governor Eric Holcomb is expected to sign the bill into law this week, and the sale of alcohol on Sundays could take place as early as this Sunday, March 4th. Voices in the Street asked your community how they feel about the repeal of the prohibition on Sunday sales.
This coming Sunday marks the first time in nearly a century that Indiana will allow Sunday sales of alcohol. So I'm going around asking people, do you support that initiative? Are you excited? Do you have any big plans? Or are you planning on partying it up on Sunday?
No, I don't.
It's fine that it is happening, but we're not going to party about it. No. But
not even think twice.
Do you support Sunday alcohol sales?
Yes, I do support it. Absolutely.
Why?
More alcohol, more fun.
So do you plan on like partying at all this weekend or celebrating?
Not really celebrating in particular, but I'm sure I'll make a trip Sunday.
I'm not really like taking a side. I think it's interesting that they're doing this since it's been instilled in the state for so long. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens with it.
So, the Indiana General Assembly recently approved Sunday alcohol sales. It's anticipated to take effect this weekend. So, I'm going around asking people in the community, do you support the measure?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Why do you support it?
Because I think, like, it's not a big deal. And I think, I don't know, a lot of states have already, it's legal to buy alcohol on Sundays. So, why not here?
Final question. Will you be celebrating it all this Sunday?
Yes, probably.
Right. Do you support the measure?
This is the first I'm hearing about it, but I guess.
You do. Can you think of any negatives, any reason you wouldn't support it?
I guess maybe like increased underage drinking. Like, would that be an issue?
Do you support the measure?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Can I ask you why?
I think it's been a long time coming, and I believe we're the only state that still has it in effect, so I don't see a reason why it should still be there.
Okay, final question. Do you plan on celebrating this Sunday? Any crazy party plans?
Yes. Yes, sir.
All right, the Prohibition Party.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin, Andrew McKieran, and Sarah Vaughn in partnership with Cats Week from Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin and Sarah Vaughn.
Voices in the Street was produced by Wes Martin. Our engineer today is also Wes Martin. Our theme music is provided by Danny Graff, Ben Lumsdane, and Scott Smadke. Executive producer, Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, a WFHB news and public affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at WFHB.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.